Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. You know, when you think about the human body, it's really easy to just picture it as like plumbing and scaffolding.
Right, yeah, like bones and blood vessels.
Exactly, but the reality is much more electrical. I mean, we are fundamentally walking electrical grids.
Mm-hmm.
And right at the heart of that grid are these microscopic structures called voltage-gated calcium channels.
Yeah, they are basically the biological electrical wiring of our bodies.
Right.
They regulate everything from, you know, your heartbeat to your brain development to how your muscles contract. And we are talking about massive proteins here.
Mm-hmm.
They're made up of thousands of individual building blocks, the amino acids, and they all fold together into these precise, highly sensitive 3D shapes.
Which poses this enormous real-world problem for modern medicine.
Yeah.
Because what happens when just one amino acid, like, out of thousands in this massive protein, what happens when just one mutates?
Yeah, just one tiny typo in the genetic code.
Exactly. And it frames this massive dilemma of the genomic era, you know? Like, we have this incredible sequencing technology now. We can sequence a patient's genome incredibly fast.
Right, in a matter of hours or days.
Yeah, and we routinely find thousands of mutations or variants in their DNA, but we have almost no idea which of those variants are just harmless quirks that make you who you are and which ones are deadly channelopathies.
It's a huge issue in the clinic right now.
Right, so it makes you ask, how could this change our ability to instantly diagnose a dangerous genetic mutation before it wreaks havoc? I mean, how do we find the needle in a haystack when the haystack is literally the entire human genome?
Well, it requires stepping back from the traditional ways we study proteins. We can't just rely on looking at the structure in isolation anymore.
Yeah.
We actually have to look back in time. We have to decode the evolutionary history of the protein itself, you know, to understand where its physical vulnerabilities are hiding.
Which is mind-blowing. And today we celebrate the work of a collaborative team, including Sushin Tang, Horia Hermenian, Petronelle Tuluk, Nadine Ortner, and Klaus Liedl from the University of Innsbruck and Medical University of Graz, who have advanced our understanding of voltage-gated calcium channels and evolutionary modeling.
Yeah, and to really appreciate the leap forward this team has made, we need to focus on their specific target.
Okay.
They were investigating a gene called CACIN1D, and this gene encodes a critical part of a voltage-gated calcium channel known as CAB1.3.
CAB1.3, right?
Exactly. Specifically, it codes for the pore-forming alpha-1 subunit.
Which is basically the tunnel.
Right. You can visualize it as the actual physical tunnel that the calcium ions travel through to get inside the cell.
And when mutations alter this specific CAV1.3 channel, the clinical outcomes are just severe. I mean, from the background here, pathogenic variants in this channel generally cause two distinct types of clinical issues.
Yeah, two very different extremes.
Broadly speaking, you've got gain-of-function mutations.
Right.
Where the channel is too active, right?
Yes. It opens way too easily, or it just stays open too long, and that floods the cell with calcium.
And those mutations are strongly linked to severe neurodevelopmental disorders, like autism spectrum disorders and various endocrine issues.
Right, and then you have the complete opposite physical failure, the loss of function mutation.
Where it's just broken.
Exactly. The channel is broken in a way that prevents it from opening properly, or it just doesn't conduct calcium at all.
Wow.
And this leads to a very specific, really severe condition called SANDE syndrome. That stands for sinoatrial node dysfunction and deafness.
Right.
Because the heart's natural pacemaker relies on these specific calcium channels to keep time. So you get severe cardiac arrhythmias alongside congenital deafness.
Okay, let's unpack this. We've got this CAV1.3 channel. I like to think of it kind of like a highly complex microscopic bouncer at a very exclusive club. Like, the cell is the club.
That's a great way to picture it, yeah.
So the bouncer's job is to let calcium ions in, but only when the electrical mood of the club is exactly right. And we have thousands of these bouncers in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, through genetic sequencing, we know some of these bouncers are doing a terrible job. Like, some are just leaving the velvet rope open, letting everyone in. That's your gain of function.
Causing the neurological issues, right.
And others are refusing to open the rope at all loss of function, causing SANDE syndrome. But the problem is, we can't figure out which bouncers are broken just by looking at their ID badge, their genetic sequence.
Exactly. And that gets to the core bottleneck in the field right now.
Yeah.
To figure out the actual mechanics of a mutated channel, whether it is a gain of function or a loss of function, scientists actually have to physically test it. They use a technique called patch clamp electrophysiology.
Which, from what I gather, is not something you just run through a machine and get a printout 5 minutes later, right?
Oh, not at all. It is a highly manual, totally grueling process.
Oh.
A researcher basically has to look through a microscope, take a microscopic glass pipette, and literally attach it to the membrane of a single living cell in a petri dish.
That sounds impossible.
It takes so much practice. You create this tight seal over just one or maybe a few of these channel proteins. Then you manually manipulate the electrical voltage across the membrane, and you measure the actual calcium current flowing through that specific channel.
Wait, really?
Yeah, you are measuring electrical currents in picoamps. That's trillionths of an amp.
So if a hospital sequences a patient's genome and finds a completely unknown mutation in this channel, a researcher has to, like, manually build that mutant channel in a lab, put it in a cell, and sit there with a tiny glass tube to see what it does.
That's the reality, yeah. That could take months or even years for a single variant.
And considering most of the mutations we do understand only hit the well-studied classic regions of the channel, we're just left with thousands of functionally unannotated amino acids. We just don't know what they do.
Right, and because physically patch clamping every single unknown variant is functionally impossible, the research team from Innsbruck and Graz had to build a new toolbox. They had to find a way to bypass the guesswork.
So what did they do?
They built a three-pronged workflow that starts with an ingenious concept, evolutionary modeling. They used a computational method called sequence covariation to assign an epistatic score to every single amino acid in the channel.
Okay, let's break down that epistatic score, because the biology here is just fascinating. They are looking at how these calcium channels have evolved over hundreds of millions of years across countless different species, right?
Exactly.
So they're looking for pairs of amino acids that change together. It's almost like a biological buddy system.
I love that, a buddy system, yes.
Like, if one amino acid in the protein structure shifts slightly to the left over a million years of evolution, its partner on the other side of the channel has to shift slightly to the right to maintain the physical balance of the channel.
That is the absolute essence of sequence covariation. If two amino acids co-evolve across millions of years to maintain the channel's 3D fold, it means they are functionally coupled.
Wow.
They physically rely on each other to keep the channel working. So by analyzing these evolutionary patterns, the algorithm identifies which positions in the protein are highly conserved.
Meaning they almost never change across species.
Right. High evolutionary conservation is a massive red flag. It tells us that mutating that specific site is highly likely to break the channel. So the algorithm assigns a high pathogenicity score to those exact vulnerabilities.
So you don't even need to know what the amino acid does structurally yet. You just ask the evolutionary record, hey, has this ever changed in a fish or a mouse or a human?
Exactly.
And if the evolutionary record says, no, we do not touch that specific amino acid, you know it's functionally critical. That gives us a map of evolutionary warning signs.
Yes, but a list of scores on a spreadsheet doesn't show you the physical terrain of the protein, which leads to the second part of their toolbox, structural analysis. The team took those evolutionary pathogenicity scores and mapped them onto high-resolution 3D cryo-EM models of the Cav1.3 channel.
So basically, they used a super-cooled electron microscope to take a hyper-detailed 3D photograph of this protein, and then overlaid their evolutionary red flags directly onto that image.
Yes.
So they can physically see where these highly sensitive critical sites live within the architecture of the channel.
It allows you to see the spatial relationships, which is so important. You might find that two amino acids that are incredibly far apart on the linear genetic sequence are actually folded right next to each other in the 3D space.
Forming like a critical hinge or a structural pillar.
Exactly.
Okay, but a 3D map with evolutionary warning signs is still just a theory. Right? Like, if I'm a doctor, I'm not diagnosing a patient based on a computer model of a fish and a human.
Fair point.
We know evolution tells us society is highly conserved, so mutating it will probably cause a problem. But I have to push back on this for a second. Wait, evolution tells us what is conserved, but can it tell us what the mutation actually does mechanically?
That's the big question.
Like, does it cause a gain or loss of function?
What's fascinating here is that the evolutionary model itself does not predict the direction of the change.
It doesn't.
No, it only flags functional perturbation. It tells you, if you change this amino acid, the channel will stop functioning normally. It cannot tell you if the bouncer will leave the door open or weld it shut.
Oh, I see.
That is exactly why the third part of the toolbox, is essential, the electrophysiological validation. They had to put their evolutionary predictions to the test.
Taking it back to the patch clamp.
Right back to the patch clamp. They deliberately introduced those specific mutations into real Cavi 1.3 channels and put them into living cells.
In the paper notes, they used transiently transfected TSA201 cells, right?
Yes, they did.
For the listener, this basically means they used a specific type of human embryonic kidney cell as a biological blank slate.
Right, it's a very standard model.
So they temporarily inserted the genetic instructions for the mutated channel into these kidney cells. And then the cells built the channel, placed it in their membranes, and allowed the researchers to measure the actual calcium currents.
It provides a clean environment to isolate the biophysics of the channel itself, you know, without the interference from the complex networks you'd find in a real heart or brain cell.
So did it work? Were the predictions accurate?
The results were highly validating. Retrospectively, they asked the algorithm to evaluate the channel without giving it any prior human knowledge. And the algorithm perfectly flagged all the known classic functional sites first.
Like the voltage sensing domain and selectivity filter.
Exactly. It proved the math worked on things we already knew.
But then it revealed entire clusters of novel functional sites, right?
Yes. Regions of the channel sitting completely outside the classic areas. Areas that researchers had functionally ignored for decades. So the team selected 5 of these predicted, previously unannotated pathogenic variants to actually test in the lab.
And the data from these prospective discoveries is just incredible. Let's look at the first specific variant they tested, one called N745A.
Okay, so the N745A mutation is located in domain 2 of the channel on a segment known as S6. This sits right near the activation gate.
The actual door.
Exactly. And the structural model predicted that this mutation disrupts a critical network of hydrogen bonds that normally form just before the channel opens.
And the patch clamp data backed that up completely.
Oh.
When they measured it, they found that the channel was successfully being built by the cell.
Right, it wasn't just falling apart.
Right, it made it all the way to the cell membrane. They could actually measure the tiny gating current, the initial electrical shifts that show the channel is physically there and trying to respond to the voltage.
But
there was zero calcium influx.
Yeah.
None. It's like the bouncer is standing at the door, wearing the uniform, looking at the IDs, but is physically incapable of unhooking the velvet rope.
It is a complete loss of function. Identical to the molecular failure that causes the severe cardiac dysfunction and deafness seen in Sandoz syndrome.
That's wild.
The evolutionary algorithm flagged a completely unknown site, and the physical test proved it was a critical failure point.
Okay, then there was variant F1362A. This one is located at the interface between the voltage sensor and the pore. The structural modeling suggested this mutation disrupts something called hydrophobic contacts.
Right.
And I want to make sure we visualize this correctly. Instead of thinking of like a rusted hinge on a door, let's think about the physics of oil and water.
Okay, I like this.
The inside of a cell is a watery environment, right? Hydrophobic or water-fearing parts of a protein want to stick tightly together to avoid the water. It creates a tight physical seal, almost like two magnets coated in grease.
Yes, exactly.
So when this mutation happens, does it change the shape of the protein just enough to let water slip in, breaking that greasy seal and making the channel physically harder to manipulate?
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it. The mutation weakens the physical coupling between the voltage sensor, the part that feels the electricity, and the pore, the actual door.
Right.
Because that hydrophobic seal is compromised, the mechanical transfer of energy is incredibly inefficient.
And we see that inefficiency in the electrical data. This mutation shifted the voltage dependence of activation significantly by a positive 11 millivolts.
Which is a huge shift.
Right. Wait, a positive 11 millivolt shift?
Yeah.
If the resting state of a cell is generally negative, does that mean the cell has to work significantly harder, electrically speaking, just to pry this bouncer's door open?
It requires a much stronger electrical depolarization to activate the channel, yes.
Wow.
Because this specific calcium channel normally acts as a biological pacemaker, it functions at very low negative voltages to keep a steady rhythm. So requiring that much more electrical effort likely abolishes its native pacemaker role completely.
The clock winds down because the physical machinery is too stiff to operate normally. Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. I'm looking at the data for a variant called A376V, and I have to admit I'm a bit confused by what I'm seeing here.
Oh, the big surprise.
Yeah. This variant swaps out a small amino acid, alanine, for a much larger, bulkier one, valine, near the pore loop and domain eye. Now, clinically, before this study, this variant was associated with patients suffering from SANDA-D syndrome.
Right.
So the clinical assumption was that this mutation causes the loss of function, right? The assumption was the door is closed.
But when the team put the A376V variant into their patch clamp setup, the data showed a completely different biophysical reality.
What did it show?
The channel didn't lose function. It actually conducted robust calcium currents. In fact, it had a shift of about -6 millivolts.
Wait, -6? It actually became easier to open.
Yes.
It conducts calcium at lower membrane potentials, which is a clear gain of function. Let's unpack the physics of that. Why would a bulkier amino acid make the door easier to open? Is it like shoving a physical wedge under a door?
Pretty much, yeah.
Because valine takes up more physical space than the original alanine, it crowds the area. It puts constant structural tension on the activation gate, meaning it takes a much weaker electrical signal to pop the door wide open.
The extra bulk physically destabilizes the closed state of the channel. It really is a mechanical wedge that leaves the gate primed to swing open prematurely.
So what does this all mean? Like, regarding the limitations of the study, how can the clinica say the door is closed, causing SANDA-D syndrome, but the lab shows the door is propped wide open? I mean, a patient has a disease historically caused by a lack of calcium, but the biophysics show the channel is eagerly letting calcium in.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it highlights a crucial limitation of how we currently study these channels, and it underscores the sheer complexity of systems biology.
Right.
We have to remember the testing environment. The research team used transiently transfected human embryonic kidney cells. As we discussed, that is a simplified heterologous cell system.
Right, it's not a native environment.
Exactly. It is fantastic for isolating the raw biophysics of the mutant channel itself in a vacuum.
But a human being is not a simplified kidney cell floating in a vacuum.
Definitely not.
Our cells are just a chaotic soup of interacting proteins, enzymes, and genetic regulators.
Exactly that. The simplified cell system misses complex native human physiological factors.
Oh, I see.
It doesn't account for post-translational modifications, RNA editing, or the complex protein-protein interactions that occur in a real human sinoatrial node or inner ear.
So the mutation itself, the bulky valine wedge, makes the channel easier to open mechanically. But in the actual patient's body, it's highly possible that some other protein or physiological process interacts with that specific bulky mutation, and the resulting train wreck shuts the whole system down.
Context completely alters the outcome. This raises an important question for clinical diagnostics, actually. It is also highly possible that the patients diagnosed with the inherited A376V variant have other undiscovered genetic mutations elsewhere in their genome that are actually responsible for their specific SANDA-D syndrome symptoms.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah. The A376V variant might just be a complex biological passenger, or it might be interacting with a completely different hidden genetic flaw.
That is staggering.
Yeah.
It shows just how much context matters in genomics. You can't just look at a DNA sequence and guess the clinical outcome.
No, you really can't.
You need the evolutionary history to flag the danger, the 3D structure to map the physical terrain, and the electrophysiology to test the raw mechanics. And even then, you have to place those mechanics back into the context of the whole human body.
And that is the true value of this workflow. This combined toolbox, evolutionary modeling, structural visualization, and electrophysiology is a highly scalable strategy.
Right, because the bottleneck in understanding genetic variants isn't just limited to K1.3 calcium channels.
Exactly. We have voltage-gated sodium channels that regulate pain and epilepsy, potassium channels that regulate cardiac rhythm.
Because they all share a deep ancestral history.
Yeah.
The rules of evolution that apply to the structural integrity of a calcium channel will likely apply to the complex gating mechanisms of sodium and potassium channels as well.
Yes. The next critical step for the field is expanding this evolutionary modeling to those other distant ion channel families.
That makes total sense.
When a patient arrives in a clinic tomorrow with a completely unknown mutation in any of these vital electrical channels, doctors won't have to wait years for manual testing or rely on educated guesses.
Right.
They can run the evolutionary algorithm, rapidly predict the physical danger of that specific amino acid swap, map it to a 3D structure, and immediately begin formulating tailored, personalized treatments based on a deeply informed hypothesis.
It completely flips the script on how we approach diagnostics. So, to sum this all up, by simply reading the evolutionary history of calcium channels across hundreds of millions of years, scientists can now rapidly pinpoint hidden disease-causing vulnerabilities down to the single amino acid level.
Which is incredible.
It is. This computationally bypasses the structural guesswork that has slowed us down for decades, providing a direct, brilliantly illuminated path to understanding rare, devastating channelopathies.
It replaces trial and error with predictive evolutionary insight.
And it leaves us with an incredible thought to mull over. What does this mean for the future of medicine? If we expand these evolutionary algorithms across all the protein families in the human body, we might soon be able to computationally map the exact breaking points of an individual's entire genome, predicting a person's unique physical vulnerabilities before a disease ever has the chance to manifest.
It's a completely new era.
It really is. This episode is based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
One small change can flip this switch, rewrite the channel space. Tension in the sequence, like a drum about to break. Signals in the silence, telling us which steps to take. We don't need a crystal ball, we read what time preserved in the folds of evolution. Every contact gets its word.
Let's turn the mystery into control. Hey! Light it.